It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 30 years after the series had launched.
The Babylon Podcast was a dream given form. Its goal, to discuss the place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully.
It's a port of call, home away from home for established fans, newbies, John, Blaine, and guests.
Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night.
It could be a dangerous place.
Wait, what?
But it's our last, best hope for peace.
This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations.
The year is 2024.
The name of the podcast is...
Babylon 5, 30 years later. Hello, and welcome to our first feedback episode for Babylon 5, 30 years later. So I am one of your regular hosts, Blaine Dowler.
And I am the other regular host, John Wilson.
Yes, and here we are, actually recording within a week of release for the first time ever, I would say.
It's funny because we've recorded like two and a third seasons of coverage for this show. And for 80, 90% of that time, we were pre-release. So we've been wondering, will people respond? Will there be feedback for a feedback special? Will people write in their thoughts? And it could have been, no, you didn't. But you did! And here we are to read them and talk to you about them and say thank you.
Yes. Yay. Thank all of you.
So you will hear us wondering about it for the next year or two. Will there be feedback? You're going to hear us wondering about that on the regular episodes. Yes, there is.
Yes, because as John said, we are well ahead. Actually, after this feedback episode, our next recording will cover Point of No Return, Season 3, Episode 9.
Right. One of the mid-season finales, quote-unquote, of Season 3. But we have a lot to cover, so I suggest, Blaine, that we dive right in.
Okay. Let us start with those who were sharing our initial podcast announcements when these went out on social media. So we'll start by thanking Mahatma Randy 5977, who, when he shared it on Facebook, added the comment, "This is a podcast my friend Blaine is doing about Babylon 5. Actually, this is the prologue to the podcast proper, where he lays out what they're going to be doing and how they're going to be doing it. Ambitious would be an understatement. So if you like B5, check it out. And if you have some interest in B5 but have never taken the plunge, this is actually a great introduction. And yes, they will be discussing the relationship between B5 and DS9 sooner or later." And with that, he included a direct link to our Histories with Babylon 5 episode that came out the same day as our coverage of The Gathering. So, thank you for that.
I think that we've probably mentioned DS9 on every single episode. Only as it was relevant. Like, we didn't go out of our way to talk about it, but it keeps coming up because Star Trek is sci-fi and Babylon 5 is sci-fi and Deep Space Nine has similarities, and there it is.
Yeah, and also because for a disturbingly long period of time, the networks thought, well, Star Trek is the only sci-fi that can last more than 3 seasons, so why bother? And I don't know how they got that in their heads, because, yeah, a lot of sci-fi shows lasted less than that, so there was a problem in a long time where Star Trek was the only other sci-fi to compare to. But I'm looking at things like The Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno, that was 5 seasons. Do they not count that as sci-fi? But anyway.
I would say that something like Incredible Hulk is sci-fi in name only. It has a sci-fi premise, but it is much more character drama. Kind of like Quantum Leap. Mm-hmm. Quantum Leap has a sci-fi premise in order to open the door for character drama without really involving the sci-fi elements in the character drama. But that is a digression. Digressions are fun, though. This is a feedback special. Mm-hmm. We also want to thank shares of the original announcement from Aaron Henley, Paul Riches, Paul Spataro, previous guest on the show, Sean Whalen, and Shag Matthews. Now, those are the people whose names we could see because of privacy settings. There are others of you out there. So even though we can't name you, we do thank you also for sharing the show. Please continue to do so as you feel the desire.
Yes. Now, our first more substantial comment came with the Our Histories on Babylon 5, again from Mahatma Randy 5977, this time on YouTube, where he specifically says, "What about Third Space? Where will you slot that in, since it aired during Season 5 but was set during the middle of Season 4? And the response I gave directly on YouTube was, Third Space aired on July 19th, 1998, in between episodes 17 and 18 of Season 5, so we'll release our coverage of it on July 19th, 2028, in between our coverage of episodes 17 and 18 of Season 5. So episode 17 was in June and 18 was released in October, but we never want to have more than 3 weeks between podcasts. So we currently plan to fill that gap with a feedback episode and our discussion of the first PsyCorp novel, as well as JMS's contributions to The Real Ghostbusters and Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future.
Yeah, that goes along with our idea of during the breaks between episodes, the extended breaks, we want to have little specials on other things that JMS did to contribute to TV. Because he did a lot. So, yeah. So then we received an email from not my cousin. He's kind of my cousin. He's not my cousin. But he has a name, same name as my cousin. Ryan Wilson, a good friend and longtime listener to the various shows and ramblings I have produced. He has a comment about, or he has sent us an email, rather, about episode 0 and The Gathering. So I'm vamping as I go to that email. There it is. And Ryan says, "Hello, Babylon 5 podcast people." Hello, Ryan. "When Blaine Dowler and John Wilson team up for a podcast, and when they decide to discuss one of my favorite shows, and there's no choice but to listen. Well, I'm glad you like them, but do you like us, Ryan? That's the big question. I discovered Babylon 5 sometime in season 4 of its original run, I think during the long break between episodes 18 and 19. A friend of mine showed me 2 or 3 episodes, and I was hooked. There was a local station in Toronto that showed reruns of the earlier episodes Monday through Thursday, so I was able to tape them and watch them over the weekend. Yes, this goes back to the days of VHS cassettes." Yeah, because that's all you had in the 1990s to get stuff off your TV. There was no DVRs yet. That was still at least a half a dozen years in the future.
I'm trying to remember if my Betamax was still working in the 90s or not.
My mom's best friend from her 20s that we still went over to see sometimes in her 30s and 40s had an entire collection of Betamax tapes recording the original Star Trek series off the air. So all 79 episodes recorded off the air on Betamax tapes.
Yeah, I don't remember when exactly my Betamax died. I know it was after the Super Nintendo came out, because I do remember recording that Super Mario World, it is possible for a big Mario to get through the room in Bowser's castle with the spiky columns that go up and down. You just have to be very, very careful about hit detection and overlaps and pixels. Yeah, but I wore it out rewatching Ghostbusters over and over and over and over, which we'll bring up again in a future podcast.
I should also mention, while we're on the topic of Betamax, that my Mindy got me 2 video cassettes of collecting original series Transformers episodes, and she ordered them, and when we got them, it turns out they were from the UK and on Betamax tapes. So I don't have anywhere to play them, but I do have 2 cool, you know, old school Transformers videos. So it makes me happy.
Yeah, have fun trying to find a pal Betamax.
Ryan goes on to say, "At the time, I had never seen a show like this, and I really enjoyed it. I would lend out those tapes to help spread the good word." He was proselytizing, Blaine.
Okay.
"I don't think The Gathering was shown, or at least it wasn't shown as often, which meant it was a while before I saw the pilot movie. I don't remember if I saw the original or remastered version. I do remember not liking it much. I was used to how the show worked, so the pilot movie seemed out of place. I can put some of this down to pilot weirdness, like cast changes, the Vorlon ambassador shaking hands, Jeffrey Sinclair with a different girlfriend, etc. I always wondered how audiences would have reacted on its original airing." I don't know if we have, like, in all the Usenet stuff that you have in collected volumes, if we have it going all the way back to January 93 to see how they reacted to the original pilot.
Yeah, there's not as much of that, because the Asked and Answered books are focused specifically on Straczynski's replies, the questions that users asked are kind of summarized in the margin.
Okay.
And then it's just what Straczynski wrote.
So it's not just general responses from the public, but Straczynski's interactions with the public.
Yeah. So if you see jmsnews.com, it has everything he responded to. Not everything is included in the book sometimes because, you know, he'll answer the same question 7 times over 20 years, and only one of those 7 needs to be included. The rest are redundant. But just based on the level of conversation going on and number of times he said, "Well, here's the current state about whether or not we're going to get renewed," there were definitely some people who were interested and looking forward to seeing it continue. If there wasn't a fairly strong response, it wouldn't have been picked up.
They wouldn't have gotten the green light. Yeah. Ryan says, I did remember being surprised how much of the show was being introduced in throwaway lines of dialogue. Yeah, because Ryan has, he starts with season four, late season four, and then goes back and watches the earlier stuff, and he's able to see all of those throwaway lines of dialogue for their meaning on the first go. He says, I admire Blaine only mentioning a fraction of the setup, but it's good that he's keeping spoilers out of this as much as possible while still mentioning how there are arc elements all over the place. It's a delicate balance. I would hate for John to be spoiled about things. I don't like to be spoiled about things. I get very sensitive. I'm offended easily by spoilers. But also other new listeners. So other new watchers who are listening. Ryan says, great start to the podcast. It's always nice to hear Paul Spataro. I don't think I'll rate these two podcast episodes out of Jaws, but I am looking forward to the rest of the series. I'm already dreading the breaks. I will try to be a bit more current on this show instead of letting it linger. Did you have to let it linger? For example, I still haven't finished the X-Files retrospective podcast or X-1. There's a good chance that by the time I send this email, you'll be releasing episodes from season three. Thanks again, Ryan Wilson. Not releasing, but yes, recording.
Yep. And as we will find, Ryan is up to date. He got us feedback on every released episode so far. And yeah, I'm not offended by being behind on the X-Files retrospective. That was the first podcast I ever did. And if I were to go back and do it again, first of all, I would have someone else there with me and I'd make a few changes. And X-1 is one of my old time radio podcasts. I did X-1 and Dimension X in the old time radio at Bureau 42, which has since moved on. It's done the complete run of Duffy's Tavern, which was 137 episodes. It's got a lot of the early Cheers DNA. The creator of Duffy's Tavern is the father of one of the co-creators of Cheers. And then, as we're recording this, we are most of the way through Pat Novak for Hire, which will wrap up in June. And I know the next two topics I want to do. I'm just toying with the order I'm going to do them. So yes, thank you for that, Ryan. And we have more to come from him. Yes. Okay, so our next comment is from user Spragana on The Gathering over on YouTube. And the original comment reads, just my 3 cents about the availability of the original version of The Gathering. It had been available on DVD in Europe. I'm not sure if it was intentionally or through some misunderstanding. Years ago, I'd been trying to get both versions of the pilot. The easiest way to distinguish them is the composer's name. The original had music by Stuart Copeland of The Police. The special edition had new score from main series composer Christopher Frank from Tangerine Dream. So I've been paying attention to credits listed with the DVD I've been buying, but still ended with 2 copies of one version. I do not remember which it was at this moment. I had fumed about it at a B5 Usenet group. Yes, I'm that old. So am I. I was very active in the X-Files and Smallville groups. And a UK fan reached out to me as he had the opposite problem. 2 copies of the other version. So we did the logical thing. We swapped. And this is why I think it might have been a snafu. When I played the other version, my DVD player recognized the disc as the same as my version. It started playing at the time I turned off my disc. So those DVDs had the same identifying codes players used to differentiate between discs, but different content. Yeah, so the response I gave on YouTube was, that does seem to indicate a snafu. Glad you got both versions, though. And then my only copy of the original isn't even the actual production, but I just have the script in the books provided by JMS. So if I'm actually watching it as recorded video, it's only the remastered version.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for writing, Spragana. Now it's my turn to read one from Mahatma Randi, 5977, also commenting on The Gathering over on YouTube, says, I would really like to see a re-edit of The Gathering, either official or fan edit, which combined the best aspects of both versions. While I don't think the alien petting zoo worked, I do think that the discussion there was more important than the truncated version that we got. So the discussion they had while they were walking through the zoo was good, even if the zoo itself was not great. They say, I did very much prefer the extended scenes with Carolyn and Laurel to the truncated versions we got in the original airing. I don't really think either version is definitive, but both have very important elements which the others lack. It would be child's play to do this now, I'm given that there are DVD copies of the original version, so even if the original elements are lost, they could easily be reconstructed using modern technology. Also, some of the effects for the outside of the station in the TNT version have been rejiggered a little bit. For instance, on my VHS copy, you can clearly see that one of the outer rings of the 5 is spinning at a faster rate, which ties in with Sinclair's line about how they can even adjust the gravity of some sections. We never saw that again in the series, so I understand why they cut it out here, but still. I actually kind of prefer the uniforms they wear on this to the ones in the series proper. They don't have as much visual pop. so I totally understand why they changed them, but they just seem a little more functional and realistic. I totally get that feeling of I wish I could take all the different edits they've done and compile all the best bits. I had, I believe it was officially known as the extended cut of the Star Trek The Motion Picture. And there are several scenes and transitions and lines of dialogue from that that are in my head because I've watched it umpteen times. And I love, love, love the director's cut DVD that we got. But it is missing some of my favorite lines.
Yeah, and then the 4K version is the one that's actually closest to the director's cut. So, little peek behind the scenes. Star Trek The Motion Picture was running way behind in production. So what was released is actually what's known as a work print. It's just every scene that's there, the longest takes of everything. That's why the ship flyby is so long. That's every frame of footage they filmed of it. And the idea is once you take that work print with the longest version of every scene, you trim it to adjust the pacing. Only Robert Wise didn't have time to trim it. They literally finished scoring on Wednesday, and he was taking wet copies of the film straight from the printing house to the premiere on Friday. So it was right. Very, very rushed and last minute, and Robert Wise was not happy with it. The director's cut was reconstructed based on his notes, but the 4K version that we recently got that was streamed on Paramount Plus, that one was one where it wasn't just his notes, but Robert Wise was brought in, and he had it. So that is his preferred version, is the one in Ultra HD. But yes, I'm one of the guys who enjoys the motion picture in all of its cuts, but I actually do like the 4K version the best. All right, moving on to Ryan Wilson's next email. So this one is about Midnight on the Firing Line and Soul Hunter. Ryan says, "Hello again. Now this is more like it. Midnight on the Firing Line has many elements I like in the show. We have confusing Koshisms, Narn Centauri conflict, some great character moments, and, of course, explosions. We have a first mention of Spoo. I don't really know what it is, but I think I'll pass. We have some strange Garibaldi stuff. We have one of the alien ambassadors being confused at human culture. It does feel like we're going over the same ground with Jakar, but that's where he is at this point. Andreas Katsoulis tended to play villains from what I remember. The Fugitive, Hotshots Part 2, etc. Etc., including Commander Tomalak on Next Generation."
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just saw him as a villain in Jake and the Fat Man, which we will discuss down the road. Funny, he was actually in the episode right before the first episode written by JMS.
Oh, so not in a JMS episode. That's funny.
Ryan continues, "I like the scene at the end between Ivanova and Talia, a good way to establish some character beats and drop some information without seeming too obvious. It's also great bringing up the question of whether or not we need to be wary of the Psi-Corps. One of the better Season 1 episodes, in my opinion. Soul Hunter is not as great, but it's not bad. I like William Morgan Shepherd. He always seemed intimidating to me with his raspy voice. Star Trek Sis didn't help disabuse me of this."
So I'm going to interrupt and say that I agree that looking back at Season 1, Midnight on the Firing Line was definitely one of the stronger episodes. And Soul Hunter, I remember really not enjoying very much whenever we watched it for the show. Enjoying it a little bit more for the show than I had enjoyed it a year and a half earlier. But watching it this time with a bit more context of the show, I got more out of it. And if I can get more understanding out of the story, that raises in my estimation. So I guess every time I've seen it, I've liked it a little bit more, but it's probably still pretty weak.
Yeah, I'd say it's, I think we can pretty much all agree that Soul Hunter is below average for Babylon 5.
Below average, yep.
But yeah, as we are going through it, we see what the average actually is, being below average does not automatically make it bad. Anyway, Ryan continues, "The idea that humans don't know what Soul Hunters are makes sense since humans are new to the intergalactic scene. While Babylon 5 might prevent wars, it can also provide useful information about the galaxy and give some of those other races some positive human interaction, at least in theory. The foreshadowing is a bit more obvious this time, but there you go. Having someone scream, 'She's using you,' would probably make me a bit more suspicious than Sinclair seems to be, especially not long after being framed for an assassination attempt, but oh well. I understand we can't get all our answers yet. That's all for this round. More to come. Great podcast as usual." So,
who screamed, "She's using you," and whom was she talking about?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Soul Hunter saying that Delenn was using Sinclair, but I could be wrong because...
That sounds right.
Yeah, I haven't watched it since we covered it, and that's... It's been some time.
I rewatched it when our episode dropped, I rewatched.
Yeah.
Because now I have two more seasons of context as we go through.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That takes us to another YouTube comment from Soul Hunter from Mahatma Randy 5977. Toward the end of the series, Delenn mentions that English is the human language of diplomacy and commerce. So other languages still exist. We hear people speaking Hebrew once this season and are spoken a lot, but English has become the lingua franca. English has become the French language for two large aspects of human society, which makes some sense and is the most widely spoken language today and has become the diplomatic lingua franca replacing French the last 70 years. And if we want to know price things, we can hypothesize why they pronounce things like Takashima and Ivanova in non-native ways. Yeah, I like where he's going with that last statement. It's kind of where I was thinking along the same lines. If English has come to dominate, then it's gonna influence pronunciations of non-English words. It already does. In the United States, people's names get anglicized. So the idea that a Japanese woman would pronounce her name differently than Japanese official pronunciation is not unusual whatsoever, even today.
Yeah, things like that happen, and they have been happening. I like to listen to old-time radio, and the number of detective stories from the 30s, 40s, and 50s where they show up at someplace fancy and pass their car off to the parking valet?
Mm-hmm.
No, in Canada, we still consistently pronounce it valet because we have enough French influence.
Which is interesting because Downton Abbey, which I assume is period accurate, also pronounces it valet. And I don't know if that's just British of the early 20th century or if that's British in general pronouncing it that way. I don't know.
Yeah, could be both. So from there, we are on to an email from Douglas Adamson. He says, "Hello, John and Blaine. First off, no spoilers here. Thank you for this podcast. I was tipped off to this show via some of our Fire and Water Network folks, well, mainly Shag Matthews, after I happened to state my opinion that Babylon 5 is not only the best TV show of all time, but is also one of the most important ones. I say that as someone who was there at the beginning of the show, who rented the pilot on VHS to show my fellow students at Harriet Watt University in Edinburgh, Scotland. I was on the Sci-Fi Society Committee as secretary at the time, and we would use a lecture theater and show two films on a Tuesday evening. Often a blockbuster, Jurassic Park, or Back to the Future with a second feature. Babylon 5 The Gathering was one of those second features, and I am glad I introduced about 70 students to that universe, even if none of us knew what it was at the time. I then rented it again a few weeks before the show was on Channel 4 in the UK for the first run."
Okay, so I played a similar role with, even though it was not, I didn't have a year to do it, but I would often invite people over or lend out DVD copies that I had made of the first episode of the new Doctor Who when it came out in 2005. So I was really trying to get everyone who could possibly care about sci-fi to watch new Doctor Who because I wanted that show to succeed. And so lots and lots of copies of Rose got watched or viewed in my home. It was a thing.
Yeah, and for me, I was in the physics club at university, and for our annual physics club Halloween, I was the one bringing in recorded episodes of the X-Files because I had them all. And once it was funny because one of the profs who tended to work late, he slipped in quietly and none of us knew he was there until it was actually a season 5 episode titled Bad Blood ended, and we heard it from the back going, "This is delightful. I was previously unaware that this show had a sense of humor." We turn around and there's one of our profs who just slipped in the back and was watching it the whole time. Anyway, back to Douglas's email. "It's safe to say that B5 changed my life. I found friends online, I had discussions with JMS online, built a whole station inside a talker/mud called Underworld with 20 other B5 fans around the UK and abroad. I went to the first B5 convention, Babcom 95 in Birmingham, where I met JMS in person for the first time, and managed to throw him off by asking him to sign an ex-library rental VHS copy of Captain Power. He had no idea anyone had heard of it in the UK. I also asked him about a smelly jacket my friend had, but that's another story."
Okay.
"I would go on to meet JMS a few more times at other UK conventions, and he always remembered me. I must have made an impression, good or bad, I never figured out. I also joined one of the infamous Babylon 5 fans groups, infamous for the singing/album, which I wasn't part of, thankfully, the Edinburgh Alliance. We had many major cast and guests come for an evening with sessions in a pub which held about 100 people. Many years later at Edinburgh Comic Con, I was able to be the host/interviewer for the panels with Patricia Tallman and Claudia Christian, two separate years.
That's fun.
So to say that I love Babylon 5 is probably an understatement. My wife once joked when I cut my finger if I was bleeding Babylon 5 or blood. But beyond my fandom of Babylon of B5, I also am in awe of what it attempted and succeeded to do. 5-year-long story, 4 years on syndication, then jumping to cable. Use of CGI in a groundbreaking fashion, having character arcs that have you despising and cheering for the same character in ways no other show had attempted outside of the soap operas. The way JMS scheduled the shooting and use of actors and crew to save money. Sure, the sets are a bit wobbly and are dressed to hide the lack of budget in certain areas, but we don't come for the sets, even if their design is incredibly clever. As a physics graduate, I love the spinning and the design of the Star Furies to show that Earth didn't have magical technology. However, I do wonder about CNC, which seems to have spin gravity effect, but I don't think CNC actually spun at all. Command and Control is actually about a third of the radius out from the docking port. The docking port is the center of B5. So it does spin for gravity. It just has weaker gravity than the rest of the station. Anyway, back to his email. All of that is backstory to my love of B5, which brings me to your podcast and indeed the way the podcast is being done. I love the fact that one of you has seen the whole show and the other hasn't. This is a unique to me way to view the show and also to think more about how it plays out now. I ordered the B5 on Blu-ray collection for my Christmas, and while I should have read the descriptions before I ordered, no extras, no commentary tracks like the DVDs had, it was fun to have an excuse to have yet another rewatch. I think the last rewatch I had was about 4 years ago when it was on UK TV again.
Well, the current rewatch will still be going in about 4 years, so
yeah,
that's good.
But this time on the rewatch, I found myself trying to anticipate what you both will discuss on the podcast. Don't get me wrong, I've rushed at speed way, way ahead to almost finish season 3 at this point. But this podcast is going to have me rewatch the episodes again on the podcast release schedule as well. This way I'll get to enjoy it 3 times. My view, your view, and the truth. I find John's views strips away some of the rose-tinted goggle view I might have of the show. And I love how Blaine is able to remind me, wait, this does mean something. Something I've really connected with this rewatch time, is how cleverly constructed and well-built the world of B5 is. Out of all the world-building authors and writers that I've read or seen on screen, none are as well-written and defined as well as JMS does with his Babylon 5 universe. Of course, once the 5 years are up, I honestly don't think that lightning has ever been rebottled, which is why I think the only way things could work now is if JMS reboots. But that's another story. That John can see some of the threads of the web, that this is the overall story, is fun, because in many respects, when we first saw B5, we didn't even know to look for threads unless you had access to the internet. I've just finished your Soul Hunter episode now and look forward to Born to the Purple. I apologize for going on so long. You never need to apologize for that.
Don't. Yeah.
And I promise to keep my further correspondence shorter. Probably not every week, but semi-regularly. I do, however, have a question for Blaine, who is a proper physicist. I've only got a degree in it and I work in IT. In the physics circles I was in at the time, everyone loved B5 over Trek as it felt real. Not that they disliked Trek, just like they liked B5 more. Was that your experience as well? There were definitely people who were very much in the B5 camp. And again, I didn't find it until DVD, so I had shifted from physics research to teaching at that time, but I do recall classmates. My first exposure to Babylon 5 was actually in a Canadian undergraduate physics conference where they brought in a season 4 episode that had just aired during the conference. So somebody taped it and brought it in so all the people who were traveling could keep up with it. And those who preferred Trek did it because of story and other character investment. Even those who preferred Trek fully acknowledged B5 had the better science. That was just not a point for debate. On the whole, though, B5 was more popular.
I think it reminds me of the Star Trek versus Star Wars debate, because Star Wars makes almost zero attempt to explain their technology, whereas Star Trek uses a small amount of real science combined with a bunch of pretend science to explain how they at least have explanations for how things work, even if it's mostly or completely made up. But then Babylon 5 is like, okay, well, maybe making up a little bit of this, but we're trying to use real ideas and make the real ideas visible in the show.
Yeah, they actually got awards from NASA for having accurate science. As Doug points out, the star Furies are pretty spot on with the way that they move in space.
Mm-hmm.
So Doug continues, anyway, I've taken up too much of your time. Thank you again for making this show, and I will listen to every episode. Well, thanks for the email. We are very happy to have you aboard.
Yes, and no apologies are required. Mahatma on Born to the Purple on YouTube says, that was very interesting that this one was produced third. That's a good and clever idea, and I didn't know it. I've always been interested in the production of this show, and I know a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, but I never paid any real attention to production order for whatever reason. Depending upon the show, sometimes that knowing the different orders has meaning for me, and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I think I've mentioned this before, whenever the first series of Doctor Who came out in 2005, I was really into the behind-the-scenes stuff, and knowing how they clumped episodes to produce them in blocks was fascinating to me. Knowing that the original series Star Trek, that the air date order and the production order have almost nothing in common is interesting to me. And also, I learned that the production order does not necessarily mean when the show was mostly produced. It means the show was assigned a number, and this was the next number in the number list. And so they started working on it, but it might have most of its filming before or after other numbers. So even production order is sometimes misleading.
Yeah, that's the order they decided to produce the episodes, which mm-hmm. is not necessarily the order they were filmed. If they said, okay, we're definitely going to make this one. There's an example of that in the sixth season of The X-Files. There's one, the production order is not first, but it was filmed first because they needed a particular location that was only available at that time. All right, yes, our next feedback is Ryan Wilson's email on Born to the Purple and Infection. He says, hello again. Not as much to say on these two episodes. First up, Born to the Purple. I'm a little unsure how much to get into here, but some of the world building is useful later on in the show. For example, lots of information about the Centauri and not a great deal that is good. The fact that slavery is normal is a problem and indicative that all is not well on Centauri Prime. Everyone is blackmailing everyone else? Not really an ideal way to get things done. More parallels between the Centauri and the Western Roman Empire falling apart, so I guess somewhere in the 4th century or 5th century AD.
I've seen similar political systems in other fantasy worlds, and even our own political system in the US has a lot of that kind of thing, just within certain legal limits, but they will be as underhanded as they can to get things done without breaking, you know, or knowing being known to break the law.
Ryan continues, I do like we get to see Londo actually in love. Not one of my favorites of the season, but it's fine and fun to watch before things get crazy later on. Yes, and I'll just mention again, I didn't remember it clearly when we recorded that, but yeah, Londo was in love with Adira there, and Adira's story is not done.
Oh, okay. Looking back on it, I found this rather endearing when I watched it a couple weeks ago. This was rather nice. I like that.
So next, Ryan says, Infection is a strange one for me. I know that many fans consider this the worst episode, not me, that's coming up in the third season, but I don't really think it's that bad. It's very standard 90s sci-fi and the usual people destroy themselves message that seemed to be around all the time then. I don't know if current television has this sort of theme these days, so it might be a more fresh message now. It's obviously a good thing to remember. I do like the show acknowledging that Sinclair is taking stupid risks and that he might be suffering from survivor's guilt. The show hasn't really gone into the details of the Battle of the Line yet, but it's not hard to imagine he might be suffering from trauma. Sinclair's speech about going to the stars is a nice hope for the future sentiment. Hopefully humanity will agree. Great show as always.
I have things to say about Sinclair that he's making me think of, but I can't say them yet because they're end of season stuff. But yeah. Seeing those things about him, seeing those sides of him brought out here really helps to flesh out the character.
Yeah, and I think I know which season 3 episode Ryan may be alluding to. But we'll discuss that more in season 3. I think at least there's one that I think is clearly the weakest to season 3. I would have to watch... I would say there's 3 contenders for the worst of the series. And I'd have to sit down and just watch those 3 to pick which is the bottom, because... The one in season 3 feels weak where it is, but I don't know if that's just because it is surrounded by some of the best of the series. So it may Right. It might be as far below the bar of expectation, but that bar was much lower when Infection came out than it was when that season 3 episode came out.
We then have a YouTube comment from Doug Adamson about the Parliament of Dreams. There are few TV shots that still stick with me years later, like the final sequence in this episode is one of those. Your coverage of this episode reminded me of why I really like the character of Jeffrey Sinclair. And Doug continues to say some other things that we're going to have to reserve for after the end of the first season, which is fine. Not shaming Doug whatsoever. It's just in our interest of keeping things new viewer friendly. We're gonna filter that.
Yeah, so we'll come back to that when he's thinking ahead and looking at how the pieces fit together. We'll come back to this at a time when all of those pieces that he's thinking about are in the past rather than the future.
Yep. Well, I only got to read like a piece of a thing, but you read the next one because then I get an email.
All right. So Mahatma Randy 5977 comments again, this time on Parliament of Dreams on YouTube. He said, "I enjoyed this a lot. This was the first episode of B5 that really made me go, wow. I wasn't solidly sold in the show at this point."
The ending of that show does so much to really leave you with a feeling. Like, you almost forget what the rest of the episode was about because the ending is like, oh, wow, that had an impact. We then have an email from Cousin Ryan who says things about Parliament of Dreams and Mind of War. There it is, Mind War. He says, "Parliament of Dreams, this is an episode I really like, and I'm not sure why. Maybe it's the romantic in me with Sinclair and Catherine finding each other after many years. Maybe it's showing a side of Jakar we hadn't seen yet. Maybe it's Peter Jurisic jumping on a table. All of those things were delightful." In my last viewing, the Sinclair and Catherine scenes, especially that first dinner, really struck me. Again, it was just like, wow. The scene of the different religions at the end is one of those scenes I think makes Babylon 5 the great show it is. I appreciate John calling Jakar an antagonist instead of a villain. I think that's an important distinction. From a certain point of view, what he's doing makes sense and might be, while not exactly heroic, completely justified. Yeah. I may have said villain in the first couple episodes, but I tried to shift that because it becomes clear after a few episodes that he's acting in the good interests of a segment of population that just happens to not be the segment of population that includes the rest of our main cast. So he's not a villain. He's just anti the interests of the human characters of the show sometimes. Natoth is always a fun addition. It's a shame she wasn't in more of the show. Agreed. Mind War. Bester! I still haven't read the real guy's novels, but I need to. Maybe this will get me to do it. He's referring to Alfred Bester's Demolition Man, the Demolished Man, which probably Demolition Man was named after that. That occurs to me like out of nowhere. Wow. That should have been obvious a long time ago. Oh, well. He says, "I think there are some later show spoilers from this episode. I guess we can discuss them in a million years." Great to have more All Is Not Well on Earth stuff. Well, not great exactly. More of Ivanova being uncomfortable around telepaths. With Psychops, who could blame her? And what did we see at Sigma 957 anyway?
Yeah, that last one is a question that we should probably get answered sometime.
We would like to have that answered at some point. Ryan, you should take care of that for us. Thanks.
All right. So next up, we have a comment left at johnreadscomics.com. There's no H in John. This is from David Spofforth about the war prayer. "Hi, John. I was interested to hear your comment about Homeguard being shown as multiracial, as if the race divide had been overcome in the face of a greater other to fear and hate. I'm reminded of a 1972 issue of The Avengers, issue 113, which featured the public reveal of the Vision and Scarlet Witch's love affair. In this story, a hate group of suicide bombers gathered to murder the Vision in an attempt to keep androids out of society. As in this B5 episode, writer Steve Englehart has said he deliberately wrote the hate group as a multi-ethnic group of both men and women. I first read this comic when I was 10 years old, and it has been the single greatest influence on my moral and ethical education that I can identify. There's a wonderful scene of Captain America opening a piece of hate mail, being shocked, then angry, and then throws it in the fire, saying, 'I don't know about your god, but a god of love is mine.' That one line, to a 10-year-old in the 70s, has probably influenced my whole outlook on decades of LGBT issues, for example. two consenting people love each other. One, it's great. Two, it's their business and nobody else's. And David, I could not agree more. As far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. if you are happy and no one's getting hurt, go for it. And
right. That's the human existence. That's the best parts of being a person is finding happiness and not hurting anybody in the process, including yourself.
Yeah. And contrary to some people's opinions, two people in love doesn't hurt anybody else. At least not maliciously. Anybody. The only hurt I can maybe see is if there's a third party who's in love with one of those two. But again, no malice there. They're just following their own heart. And that's the kind of thing everyone experiences and just has to get over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we have an email from Ryan about 107, The War Prayer, and 108, and The Sky Full of Stars. Ryan says, hello again. Hello, Ryan. It occurs to me this is probably his last email because this is April 4th, and that was 2 days ago, and The Sky Full of Stars is the last episode we released. So, The War Prayer. I always wondered where this title came from, but Blaine has us covered with the short story. Otherwise, some more information about how bad things are getting on Earth, and of course, poor Ivanova's lousy ex. Lousy, lousy, lousy. He also says, an interesting line from Londo about his wives as pestilence, famine, and death. It's interesting in this episode because we have seen him with a lover, and now we find out he has three wives back home. And it's interesting because obviously he hates them. Ryan says, The Sky Full of Stars is one of my favorites of the first season. We get more information about the Battle of the Line without getting full answers. I tend to enjoy the journey as much or more than the destination when it comes to fictional mysteries, so I'm okay with these kinds of things going on for a season or two. As long as there are answers to the mysteries that are known when the mystery is first spun. That is my preferred existence. Ryan says, even more information about how Earth isn't doing so well. And I wonder if it would have been better to reveal here that Delenn was part of the Grey Council instead of letting us know twice before. Oh, because this is where Sinclair defrocks her in his vision. And we find out we see her standing there with the cloak and the triangle on her head and everything. But we had already known coming into this that whatever the Grey Council was, she was a part of it. Ryan's suggesting that maybe it'd be better to have not said that before and to leave this as being the big surprise. He says, maybe instead we should have had only hints that Delenn was more senior than we thought without us getting confirmation about her Satai status. I wonder if that would have had more impact. What do you think?
Yeah, when I read that, I was thinking that might have worked, or even let us know that she's Satai, but have Sinclair's computer search for what that means come up empty. And not know what Satai means. So knowing she has a label. Because I think at the time, when we pulled the hood down, when we were talking about it, we realized that, you know, because the first time he pulls the hood down in this flashbacks, the person's face is away from the camera. So it's later that we find out it's Delenn. But just the fact that they obscured the face the first time and we see Sinclair react, we know it's a member he recognizes. And there's a really short list of who those would be. So I think we agreed right. It was down to Delenn and Lanier.
I think the fact that she was present at the torture of Jeffrey Sinclair was the core of that reveal, not so much that she was part of whatever the Grey Council is or that she was a whatever a Satai is. Mm-hmm. But having all of that come together in one episode, I think also would have been effective. I think it would have been a steeper learning curve.
Yeah, it might have been tough to get the exposition in to find out that, you know, what Satai was and that sort of thing. Some people might have claimed it was a cheat to introduce it there, whereas here, well, yeah, we know she's in that position, so it's, at least today, we don't know if she, this is when we learned she had been in that position during the Battle of the Line as well. But, you know, that's the thing, it may have been more effective, but also, knowing more about the complete arc, it might make sense in the complete scale of things. But I can't really say more, because even though we are very near the halfway point. If we call The Gathering two episodes in our 112 episode run, then that's 56 episodes would be the halfway mark that we planned, and that's season 3 episode 10, and we're about to record season 3 episode 9.
Okay, so I have seen basically half the show.
Yep, you are almost at the halfway point for what was originally planned before they added some made-for-TV movies and such, so.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ryan's closes out his email. Now the first break begins. I'm looking forward to Deathwalker's coverage when you come back. Hopefully you're surviving the break, Ryan.
Hopefully. All right, and now, And the Sky Full of Stars garnered quite a few comments on YouTube here. So, a few of them are fairly short. First, we have Mahatma Randi, 5977 again, saying, "See, I always figured Signs of Portents to be more of a mid-season spectacular." And I'm actually liking the fact that Mahatma has gone to more short comments that are kind of stream of thought. To me, that says he's engaged. He feels like he's part of the room and just conversing with us, which is wonderful. It makes me feel good about the quality of the podcast you're putting out there.
His next comment is Home Guard leader arrested. In the newspaper that Garibaldi was reading, there was a headline that we couldn't make out. And so he is supplying it. So Home Guard leader arrested. So the Home Guard are they're the Earth First or Earth Only terrorist group back on Earth. Is that right?
Yes.
And so one of their leaders has been arrested, which means that the administration is not in favor, or at least there's enough elements in the administration who are not in favor of Home Guard.
Yeah, so under President Santiago's lead, there are limits here. Our next comment was from the Yum Yum podcast on YouTube, saying, "You know it's a good episode when Janet Greek is directing it." This is true, and I've also checked the Yum Yum podcast channel, and they've done a lot of sort of one and done, or sometimes extended viewings of a lot of science fiction TV. So I haven't had time to listen to them yet. It's been a very busy semester at school, but I consider it worth checking out for sure. I haven't heard any yet, but it's definitely high interest topics for myself. Could be the same for our listeners.
And Doug Adamson left a comment on the John Reed's Comics website on the episode 108 and The Sky Full of Stars. He says, "I've been thoroughly enjoying the show so far." Thank you, Doug. "I know there were requests to leave feedback on various platforms, but I couldn't seem to leave any on Bureau 42 as I didn't have a login and couldn't find a way to register." So Blaine said he's going to look into that.
Yeah, we use Gravatar for our logins. I just need to make sure that it's clear. You have to create a Gravatar account, and then that will apply to Bureau 42. So I'll check that out.
And it's not so much that we want you to leave it a variety of places, although certainly that's fun. But we want to make a variety of methods available to people so that, you know, whatever flavor of feedback you like. So Doug says, "That leaves me this location, YouTube, and email." Thank you, Doug. "Anyway, I wanted to say how much I am enjoying the podcast so far and how impressed I am that it was recorded so far in the past to keep it on track. That is excellent planning. Ladies and gentlemen, Blaine Dowler." The closest I came to anything like that was the Superman in Crisis podcast, which I recorded in full before the first episode dropped, and towards the end was a bit less than successful in getting episodes out. I did get them all out, just not quite in the shape they should have been, but the meat of the show was there.
And when I started podcasting, the first show I chose was the X-Files Retrospective. And I recorded the entire first season of that, releasing it on the 20th anniversary of the show. So that would have been, 2013 that started coming out. And after I recorded the first season, I thought, you know, I'd like to do a Superman movie retrospective too, to mark that character's anniversary. So I recorded that after the first season of The X-Files. And that premiered in January 2013, whereas The X-Files premiered in September 2013. So I had almost 50 episodes of two different podcasts in the can before my first podcast ever went out.
I like some lead time. Like when we were doing Make Ours Marvel, our ideal was 13 weekly episodes recorded. If we didn't have 13, we would try to double up every time we recorded to try to work towards that number. And 13 is just three solid months. So I just felt like it was a nice, not round number in any sense of the way, meaning except for how many weeks are in 3 months. But beyond that, yes, lead time is one of those things that I actually heard a whole podcast about starting podcasts. And there are some people who go into the idea of making a podcast with the idea that you have to have the entire thing done before you release episodes. And y'all, that just ain't so. You can make an episode, encode it 5 minutes later, and put it up right then. The Legion of Substitute Podcasters has been releasing episodes immediately after recording them every week for 600 plus episodes. So they, you know, how you do it with your lead time is completely up to you.
Yeah, John Suntress now, his podcasts are recorded live through StreamYard. So if you're watching the video online, what you're watching really is live. And when they're doing it with the IAP podcast, they will do live feedback from people as part of the conversation. So yes, there's definitely multiple ways to do it. And which is right and wrong, I think, depends on the personality of the podcaster and the content you're doing. If you're doing a current event show, you don't want 2 years lead time.
There have been times whenever I've tried to revive shows and I went to it knowing, okay, I'm only going to actually post this episode if I get so many episodes done in a period of time that would be conducive to regular production. If I don't get that done, I don't release the episodes, and I don't think I've actually released any of those episodes of those attempted revivals. Yep.
And hey, we're doing this the day a new episode of the Fantasticast dropped today, which I think is the first time in a year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Steven got industrious.
Yeah.
Well done, Steven.
So I haven't listened yet, so I don't know if he's saying, okay, I've got now six in the can or whatever, because it might be that, you know, when you come back, you want to have a batch. But anyway, bottom line, as we said, it is up to the podcaster personality, the nature of the show. Do what works. Do what makes you happy. There's a tiny percentage of podcasters who actually come out in the black if we're looking at it from an accounting perspective. Most of us are doing it for passion and fun. If it's not fun, we don't do it. So this is just,
yeah,
you know, we're doing what we like.
For most of us, podcasts are unpaid hobbies.
Yeah.
And going on, Doug says, Blaine has been excellent in trying to keep knowledge of what is to come in the show to himself. That is no easy task at all. And I find it exciting to know that John is about to hit all the new episodes to him so early on. I honestly thought he had seen up to the end of season one, but the revelation that it was only up until this point struck me as funny. I can't help but wonder if the podcast tone is going to change a bit more as it becomes a reaction for John rather than a memory. I would expect so. We'll see, because I haven't listened to those episodes since they came out, so I'll be listening to them with y'all as they come out in the upcoming weeks. I'm doing something very similar with Ninjas and Bots, because Lane has not read a lot of the Transformers issues that we're covering, and I have not read a lot of the Ninja Turtles episodes that we're covering. So she has read the issues of Turtles and is trying to keep things secret from me. I have read issues of Transformers and trying to keep things secret from her. And yeah, it is an interesting exercise.
Yeah, we'll have another role reversal when we're done our B5 show, because, again, planning is a thing with us.
Yes. Regardless of the nuts and bolts of how things have been put together, the level of coverage has been perfect, I would say. Enough to discuss the episode itself, and just enough, but not too much for the foreshadowing. I'm glad that actual content is making people happy. Doug says, I have to admit it took a while to get used to John's and Blaine's cadence. As compared to other podcasts, it's far more measured and thoughtful sounding. But for a show like B5 and a retrospective coverage of 30 years later, it's perfect. I guess it's just how we talk, right?
Yeah, especially since we do our own editing. So I like to think things through and try to get the right words out the first time, because that makes the editing a lot easier and faster.
Mm-hmm, same. And if we were on the spectrum, I think that you'd probably be even more towards the, what does he say? Measured and thoughtful sounding. Probably even more to that end than I am. But I took speech therapy as a kid, and so how I speak and what I say is most of the time something that I am consciously aware of as I'm speaking. So that may come out that way. But regardless, I'm glad you're appreciating it. And grasp by saying, thank you for making this show. I look forward to the next few years. We'll have to enjoy going over what I consider to be one of the most important TV shows of all time in terms of demonstrating how the format can be used, and personally, the best TV show of all time.
Yeah, it is a great show. So thanks. We're looking forward to it too. Even though you're now recording faster than we're releasing. So with 22 episodes a season, even with our bonus episodes, we're going to release an average of half an episode a week. They'll just be bunched up most of the time. Mm-hmm. But we're recording an average of more like 0.8 episodes a week right now. So, yeah. So we have plans for what's coming after Babylon 5. And we haven't decided the announcement and release schedule for that. But if we wait until the Babylon 5 show is completely done before we announce it, we might have the next show finished at that time.
Yeah, the next project is much shorter a duration. It's
probably about half.
But yeah.
And that one, we're thinking it's not marking a specific anniversary, so it's probably going to be more like a weekly release.
Yeah, just put it out there once a week. Maybe a month off between seasons. Well, I don't know, we'll talk about it.
All right, so We have another comment from Doug Adamson on YouTube, this time about And the Sky Full of Stars. And he says there, I've been thoroughly enjoying the show so far. While I've recently blitzed seasons 1 to 4 again, for some reason I'm in no rush for season 5 right now. This publication strategy of one episode 30 years later has me remembering the excitement there was between episodes. In a world of binge watching, there is something compelling to stick to a one episode per week to help build the tension after cliffhangers or give room to think things through as to what you've just learned. I highly recommend this podcast for fans new and old of B5. Thank you very much, Doug. And I also have found, well, the binge watching has its moments. You know, I loved being able to binge Daredevil because I really wanted to see what's next, and I could. One of the things that seems to be missing is the conversation, right? We don't have the quote-unquote water cooler talk we used to have going, oh, what do you think is going to happen next? Or, you know, the explosion on the news groups. I remember I found the news groups because of the season 2 finale and season 3 premieres of The X-Files, which was a three-parter, and that season 2 finale just works on so many levels. It made so many people diehard appointment viewers right then and there. I was part of a flux of people that found the news group because of that. And I mean, like, the population of the news group pretty much tripled because of that episode virtually overnight.
And in the modern era of block releases, a lot of that feels alien. I remember how much WandaVision totally threw some segments of the viewing audience because they couldn't see the next episode. And people complained. Which, for you and me, Blaine, that's just the way things are. All of the new stuff with everything coming out on a single day, that's what feels weird.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, Netflix started that, because remember, they started as a DVD rental service. When they went to streaming, they weren't producing new content. They were basically competing with DVD sales, where you can buy the entire season at once, because they were presenting content that had already come out a week at a time on the network. And again, I think when it's new content, you lose that conversation. You get people who are, right, either you get nailed by spoilers, and then that makes me at least try to put off the series because I'm trying to forget what I just heard. Yeah, in other cases, I find that the conversation, even without spoilers, it's either, oh, it's great, you should watch it, no spoilers, and that's all you get. You miss the nuance and the details.
There's also a parallel to be drawn with comics, because comics, you have your monthly release of your issues, and so you can read one chapter a month. And then after several chapters are out, say 6 or 8 or whatever, you can go back and reread as a block. And those are two different experiences, and well-written stories feel very different when they're serial versus when they're combined. In a similar vein, if you're doing like a big read-through project of old comics, reading them interlaced, like all of one week, then all of the next week, and all of the next week. The other way to do it would be to read a chunk of Thor, and then a chunk of Captain America, and then a chunk of some other character. And those are also two different experiences, because you're getting individual chapters interspersed versus blocks of story. And so you have websites like MarvelReading.com, which is the complete Marvel reading order, which puts stories together, or you can go by release date, and it's just, they're different experiences. And so, yeah. Babylon 5 lends itself to both in different ways.
And I think the MCU, those first 22 movies, did a really good job of sort of bringing in all those worlds. You had your Iron Man chapters, the Iron Man movies. You had the Guardians of the Galaxy chapters, the Guardians movies. But you also had elements that linked them. So those first 22 movies, from Iron Man to ending with Avengers Endgame, right? They basically took the structure of one TV season that built to the finale and put it in films. And I think that was part of the success. And then when you have that big climax, and then you haven't really started building your next story yet, when COVID hits, it changed the landscape. I don't think we're going to see something like those first few phases of the MCU again. It's going to be a while before anything recaptures it.
And I would say it takes that season of viewing experience and marries it with the different franchises of comics experience. Because you have Iron Man and Captain America doing their separate things. Also, you have the Avengers comics. It just takes those different concepts of different media and brought it together into a film thing. Like you said, I don't think we're going to see phase 1 through 3 of Avengers, of the MCU. I don't think we're going to see its like again anytime soon.
No. I mean, that basically turned the Avengers movies into the equivalent of the comic book summer event that brings all the titles together.
Okay, so our penultimate comment comes from Mahatma Randi, March 23rd. About the War Prayer. This one's about the short story by Mark Twain. He says, to my shame, I did not realize the title was a reference. nor had I ever heard this before. Thank you very much. I'm indebted. Again, that was all Blaine. He wanted to post that because he has his Bedtime Stories in the Public Domain podcast. So posting a public domain story from Mark Twain, or work from Mark Twain, to pair it to as a companion piece to the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great fun. And it's going to take some time to put it together, but in a future break, I'm probably going to release The Man Who Corrupted Hadleyburg, because that was another Mark Twain work that was influential on Babylon 5.
Oh, good.
So we have one last piece of feedback that has made it in so far. And this is an email from Scott McFadden. He says, "Hi, Blaine and John. I've been looking forward to this podcast ever since John casually mentioned it on an episode of Superman in Crisis. That was probably a year ago or thereabouts. And at the time, it seemed like such a long wait."
It was.
"Now it's arrived, and I thought I'd better send you some feedback about it. John will probably recognize my name from some of his earlier podcasts." And Scott, I let him know he sent the email. He was excited. He definitely recognized your name.
Yes.
"But I believe that this is my first encounter with Blaine. So pleased to meet you." Thank you. If you've been following John for a while, you might have heard me for some of the movie talk in Make Ours Marvel. Before that, we had joined me frequently on my unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown podcast. But yeah, I think this is the first time where you said, "Okay, we are going to be regular co-hosts on a podcast together."
Unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown podcast is one of the coolest ideas for a finite work podcast out there. And if you have not checked it out and you like Marvel's comic book history, highly recommend. The fact that I was on like 30% of the episodes might influence me a little bit, but yeah, that was a really cool project.
Oh, thank you. That is one of my proudest achievements. I am finding that I am much more satisfied when you have a two-voice podcast than when it's just me. So this, the 99 Years, 100 Films I do with Trey, and listeners will hear Trey coming up. We've already recorded that one. We have some, maybe we should, when we're done all the feedback, we should probably tease the guests that we have already recorded with.
Okay.
But yes, it's really gratifying. So thank you. Scott continues, "I won't try to comment on the individual episodes, but I just wanted to give you both a general bit of praise for the podcast as a whole so far. Each episode has been very well done, and it's fun to listen to the way that you bounce off of each other. One of my favorite parts is the behind-the-scenes info that Blaine is providing, thanks to the script books that JMS has published over the years. I vaguely knew that such things existed, but I was never ambitious enough to seek them out. I'm glad you did, though." Thanks. I'm glad I picked them up, too. And because some of them are meant to be kind of exclusive and with the fans, I am sharing maybe a third of the additional information that JMS has there. I don't want to take that specialness away because that was part of his plan in this project.
Yeah, pulling out highlights versus reading the book.
Yeah, there is some really great stuff there. Scott continues, "In terms of B5 itself, I'm a bit like John in that I originally watched a bit of season one and then drifted away. Thankfully, I came back for season two and it immediately grabbed me. It was appointment television for me from then on. And it really was appointments in those days, kids. You had to be there in front of your TV when it came on, which wasn't always easy because my local station didn't always show it at the most convenient times." Yeah, we talked about the VCRs and VHS, but I talked about that grade 3-parter for the X-Files. I will never forget my reaction when I got home from work and went to watch part 3 and got 40 minutes into that hour. And then somebody had come into the next room when my parents had guests and turned on the hockey game and it recorded that instead. So that was very, very frustrating. If you know that 3-parter, right when Mulder, Scully, and Skinner sit down together for the first time they've been together since the whole thing started, boom, cuts to, I'm a bad Canadian, I don't even care for hockey, and that's what it was showing. Anyway, Scott says, "I won't spoil anything, but I'll just say to John, I envy you the experience of watching Babylon 5 for the first time. It was the first show that I could remember where I was really counting the days until the next episode. The ongoing story was so compelling that I was anxious to see what was going to happen next in a way that I had never been before. You're in for a real treat, and I think that you're really going to enjoy it. I look forward to following along. I think this email should reach you in time to be included in your first feedback special. That's the way I am with deadlines. I'll wait until they're right upon me before I stop procrastinating and do something. Hope that you are both well, and I will talk to you again soon. Scott McFadden."
So in the vein of his almost closing remarks there, I just want to chime in that the hype is real. Season one of the show was not super strong, in my opinion. It is required viewing, but season two is where the show really gets underway, and I have been having a ball. So if you're out there listening, you're like, I'm not sure. If you like anything that the show is doing, stick with us because the investment has payoff and it is worth the effort and worth the energy. Lots and lots of good stuff to come that we have recorded about and you'll hear in the future.
Speaking of the future.
First off, before we talk about the future though, let's just say thank you to everybody who emailed in.
Aaron Henley.
David Spofforth.
Doug Adamson.
Mahatma Randy.
Paul Riches.
Paul Spataro.
Ryan Wilson.
Hi, cousin. Scott McFadden.
Sean Whalen, who is now the regular co-host on Is It Jaws.
Shag Matthews, who is, he does the JLI podcast. He's a very, very, very good friend and very happy to see it. Hopefully, Shag, let me know. Are you listening?
Spragana.
And finally, the Yum Yum podcast. Thank you all very much for sharing and interacting with the show. We really, really appreciate it. The fact that we had feedback to do a feedback special here with was great.
Yes, I especially like the fact that this is going to be one of our longer episodes. As we said, you know, there's that podcaster insecurity, right? The imposter syndrome is real. We're doing all these recordings and I'm going, are we going to have a feedback episode? Is it going to be, hey, we have a review on Apple Podcasts, and it's 1 star. Okay, that's it, everybody. See you. But no, it's great to have this feedback. All right, so.
So speaking of the future, you were saying.
Yeah, so as we already mentioned, you guys have probably already heard in the gathering, Paul Spataro joined us of Is It Jaws? And we record so far in advance that by the time you heard it, Sean Whalen was the regular co-host. He was not at the time, otherwise he would have been invited, so we weren't intending to slight him, that's just the way things played out, because, again, lead time. We are very excited by our next guest. In a few episodes' time, when we talk the episode Survivors, Mark Scott Zickrey, the writer of that episode, was gracious enough to join us.
Yes.
So we'll hear from Zickrey himself.
My good friend from podcasting and nerd circles, Bethany Kessler, will be here for Signs and Portents. They love this show. And they also love Westworld. And Bethany, if you ever get that Westworld podcast off the ground, I want to know about it so I can rewatch Westworld and listen to your show and maybe guest on it. Maybe.
Okay. I have not seen Westworld, but I've heard good things. So I the time my TV watching backlog is so big. I like shows like this one because they give me incentive to go watch it. After that, we will hear Trey Hooks on two future episodes. He will join us to discuss He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, as well as our season one finale, Chrysalis.
And then Babylon 5 aficionado and podcaster extraordinaire over at the White Rocket podcasts, Van Allen Plexico.
Yes, he'll be joining us for the Geometry of Shadows. We mentioned Word Balloon before. John Suntress of Word Balloon will be joining us for Season 2, Episode 9, The Coming of Shadows. Man, there's a lot of talk about shadows here for some reason.
We just did Angles of Elevation and Depression, and the kids didn't understand that whenever your tree casts a shadow because of the angle of the sun, the shadow is going to be on the ground. It's the horizontal line of the triangle. So whenever we go over those tests, I want to make fun of them just a little bit.
Yeah, I get that. My 11th graders had to ask me what time of day noon was.
Okay. Well, some people say there's hope for the future and some people despair, and I can see both sides, honestly.
Okay, so those are the ones we've already recorded. We do have more scheduled, including, you know, people scheduled to join us for Point of No Return, Severed Dreams, Late Delivery from Avalon, Zaha Doom, plus some of the novels and the series finale. And we'll probably be slotting more in along the way because we kind of have an idea for how many guests we want each season to, you know, keep it interesting, have people in there that we'd be very happy to work with, but also still make those guests special. We don't want to have it three voices every single time because then it's not as big a deal, we find. So,
right. So a handful of guests each season is our goal. And so, yeah, that that has been working out for us well so far.
Yeah, and one other change that's coming that we just wanted to mention. Up to this point, we've had the Zocalo, originally in the middle and then at the end, where we've been promoting other podcasts. We'd love to promote them, but we've had YouTube get back to us because some of the podcasters were using music that is under copyright and managed to not have that particular episode stricken from YouTube. But with that, we're going to pull back a little bit. And when we have guests, if they've got a podcast, that will be promoted. So when Mark Scott Zikri comes on, his project that was, it's current as of the time we recorded, I think it is still current these days, is Space Command. We'll have the audio from a trailer for that. You can find the full video on his YouTube channel. It's Mr. Sci-Fi. If you check our YouTube channel, we've got the YouTube channels for Mark Scott Zikri and John Centrist linked there, so you can find their stuff in advance. But yes, we'll be cutting back on the Zocalo and just basically highlighting when we have the guests on who have something that they, you know, if they got something going on, we're happy to promote it.
See, I don't be surprised if when that Zocalo fades out. I don't know if we still have a few more Zocalo entries, but they will disappear.
Yeah, it's actually, we made that call just coming back from the break. So our next Zocalo will be with Mark Scott Zikri.
Okay. Alrighty, so that brings us to announcements for the future. And I believe the way this is falling, next week, we're back in broadcast, right?
Yeah, we are. Or, you know, yes, a week after people hear this, not a week after we record it. So yes, we...
Right.
As long as I can get this edited in the week, this will come out on Saturday, April 13th, which means Saturday, April 20th will be our coverage of Deathwalker. So this is kind of that ramp up, getting back in.
Yep. For sort of a mid-third of season one, there's a block of episodes. And we comment a lot on the blocks of episodes and how long they are and how long until we have another break and everything. Because to me, it's just kind of fascinating as we go through it, how the show was structured and its broadcast. But anyways, yes, Deathwalker next week, and then another series of multiple weekly episodes of the podcast covering season one episodes of Babylon 5. So yeah, excited to see those episodes again, hear our thoughts, and then hear y'all's thoughts about the episodes and about our thoughts.
And just a heads up, some of this tie-in media is actually quite relevant. I hadn't read the comics the first time. John and I have covered the comics. You'll hear that coverage during season two. I was pleasantly surprised by how relevant that content is. So here's a heads up that if you haven't read the comics before, you might want to track them down. If you haven't read the novels before, they don't seem to be quite as relevant to date, although that may change from what I'm hearing of some of the future novels.
Mm-hmm.
But 17 of the 18 Babylon 5 novels that are not just adaptations of episodes are on archive.org. And can be read there for free 1 hour at a time, and like checking it out of a library. If no one else checks it out before you do, you can sit there reading it for 6 hours. You just have to check out again, borrow again, borrow again at the end of each hour.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we look forward to being back with y'all for Deathwalker Talk in a week.
All right. So thank you for listening and for providing your feedback.
And good eating to you. Or is it feeding to you? Because feedback.